Hare Krishna. Thank all of you for coming today evening. And
Hindi, Hindi both.
Hindi.
If you can mix Hindi because then, okay.
Thank you. So I'm grateful to be here among all of you. And in today's class, I will try to connect my past with my present in trying to share Krishna Bhakti. So the for many Indians, Sharjah is inextricably associated with cricket. So like most Indians, I was also at one time quite mad for cricket. So today I'll speak on the topic of what cricket can teach us about life. I'll try to speak 5 points, depending on how time goes. The first is that if we look at life, we all want to succeed. And yet, success is not always in our hands. We want to do well in our exams if we are students, or we have some interview for a job, we want to do well in our job. Whatever we are, if we are cooking, we want to cook nicely. So, we all want to succeed in our life. And few things are as performance driven as sports. That means that in sports, success depends on performance. If a batsman doesn't perform, if a bowler doesn't perform, they will not succeed. And yet, even in a field which is as performance driven as sports, say cricket, even in such a field, cricketers have their own superstitions. Australia is considered to be one of the most aggressive teams in cricket. Last year when I first went to Australia, I found Australians to be very gentle, laid back, very friendly people. So then I asked the devotees over there, they said, Australians are laid back in everything except cricket. In cricket, they are known, infamous for sledging, being very aggressive. So, they go all out to say, we are in it to win it. That is their goal. And yet, many of the best Australian cricketers were very superstitious. So, Steve Waugh was a former captain of the Australian team, and he would always carry a red handkerchief in his pocket. And that handkerchief would be half inside, half outside. And if he would drop a catch, he was a good fielder, if he would drop a catch, he would look whether the handkerchief has fallen off. How did I drop a catch? So, there's another batsman, Mark Taylor. Whenever he would go out to bat, before going out of the pavilion, he would go to the washroom and make sure the lids of all the commodes would be closed. And if he got out early, before going to the pavilion, he would go to the washroom. And if any of the lids of the commode would be open, he would go and blast his teammates. Why did you keep it open? Because of that I got out. Now, we may say, oh, what is this? What has got the commode lid got to do with somebody's performance in the cricket field? There was a famous tennis player, Andre Agassi. He would wear an earring in one ear. I would see that as a good luck charm. So now, as I said, in cricket or in all sports, performance matters. But even cricketers know that performance is not all that matters. that there is something beyond their capacity to perform that shapes the results. And whatever that unknown is, which shapes the results, they try in their own idiosyncratic way to try to appease that unknown. So the idea is that, okay, my performance is in my control, but the result is not determined by my performance alone. They know that. So many things have to work out right. Okay. so many things have to work out right so that the results come out properly. So all those things which are not in their control, they try to appease by having their own superstitions. This actually points to a universal principle of life. And that is what the Bhagavad Gita talks about. That when we want phala, when we want result in life, actually there are three factors involved. There is karma, there is daiva, there is kala. So karma plus daiva plus kala leads to phala. Karma is our activity. जो हम कार्य करते हैं, प्रयास करते हैं, वो कर्म है. दैव इज डेस्टिनी, दैट विच इज बियॉन्ड आवर कंट्रोल. एंड इवन आफ्टर डेस्टिनी इज देयर, देयर इज काल, देयर इज टाइम. व्हेन ऑल थ्री वर्क टुगेदर, देन देयर इज फल. सो कंसिडर द एग्जाम्पल ऑफ फार्मिंग. व्हाइल फार्मिंग, the farmers plowing the land and sowing the seeds, that is the karma. Then rains coming at the right time in the right quantity, that is the daiva. After that, the passage of time, the change of seasons till the harvesting time comes, that is the kala. And then there is the harvest, there are the crops. So karma plus daiva plus kala leads to phala. So in all endeavors in life, it is our karma which matters, but it is not that alone that matters. So if the farmer doesn't plow the land, doesn't sow the seeds, the rains may come, but the rains will lead only to the growth of weeds. It will not lead to the growth of grain. So even when daiva is favorable, we have to do our karma. At the same time, we may do our karma, the farmer may plow the land, but if the rains don't come, if the daiva is not favorable, then the karma will not produce the phala. So when the Bhagavad Gita says, karmanne vadhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana, that you have a right to do your work, but do not be attached to the fruits. So now, one way this verse can be misunderstood is to think that the Bhagavad Gita says don't care for the fruits. The Bhagavad Gita is not telling us don't care for the fruits. There's a difference between being detached and being irresponsible. What is the difference between detachment and irresponsibility? Detachment is after the action. Irresponsibility is before the action. अगर कोई विद्यार्थी एग्जाम के लिए पढ़ाई नहीं करता है, कहता है मैं अनासक्त हूं, वो अनासक्ति नहीं है, वो गैर जिम्मेदारी है. पढ़ाई करने के बाद क्या होगा, कितने मार्क्स मिलेंगे, कहाँ मुझे एडमिशन मिलेगी, वो सब अभी मेरे हाथ में नहीं है, वो जब समय आएगा तब देख लूंगा. सो तब वो अनासक्ति है. सो द भगवद गीता इज नॉट रिकमेंडिंग इररिस्पॉन्सिबिलिटी. भगवद गीता इज नॉट सेइंग डोंट केयर फॉर द रिजल्ट्स. बट व्हेन द भगवद गीता सेज कर्मण्येवाधिकारस्ते मा फलेषु कदाचन, व्हाट इट इज एसेंशियली टेलिंग अस इज focus on what is in your control. The action is in your control, the results are not in your control. So therefore, don't obsess over the results. Now, even in a field as performance driven as cricket, we can see indications of players acknowledging the role of destiny. They may not call it destiny, they may have some other word for it, or they may not have any word for it also. But they acknowledge there is something beyond us, and that determines the results. And therefore, what is important is that what is implicitly understood, not really systematically explained, in the field of cricket. Sometimes we say, they just had bad luck. They played very well, but it was their bad luck that they lost. So what does that mean? That they played well, but the performance alone doesn't determine the result. So, now what determines what daiva, the destiny? Actually, that is also our past karma. Destiny is not just some arbitrary decision by someone. That, okay, you know, this person is good, this person is bad. Or this person I'll give good, this person I'll give bad. It's not arbitrary.
It also is happening behind. So you can speak in English, but we can just make an announcement saying that
those so, जो हिंदी में सुनना चाहते हैं वो पीछे जा सकते हैं.
हेमंगो प्रभु
पीछे ट्रांसलेशन हो रहा है.
हेमंगो प्रभु ट्रांसलेट कर रहा है उधर. सिर्फ चेंज कीजिए, ज्यादा टाइम व्यर्थ नहीं कर रहा.
ओके, थैंक यू. सो व्हाट इज दिस डेस्टिनी? इट इज आल्सो अ रिजल्ट ऑफ आवर ओन पास्ट कर्मा. नाउ In philosophy, one of the biggest problems is called the problem of evil. Problem of evil means that if God is good, why are there bad things in this world? And associated with this problem of evil is the problem of iniquity. Iniquity means injustice or inequality. So some people are born wealthy, some people are born poor. Some people are born good looking. Some people are born with mediocre looks. Some people have a phenomenal memory. Some people have phenomenal forgetfulness. So, why this difference? And actually this difference makes a lot of difference. So why is this difference there? Now broadly speaking, we may, in the broad understanding of the world, there are two explanations. It is by chance or it is by plan. So if we say this is by chance, then basically life becomes like a cosmic lottery. And in this lottery, some people are winners, some people are losers. So, you know, by lottery, you are born in a poor family. By lottery, you have a poor memory. What to do? This is this idea of chance, things happening arbitrarily. This is profoundly unsatisfactory. And that is not the way we normally function. In our life, now we function, if you go back home and you see a family member has got a scar on their hands, you'll ask them, what happened? What happened? What does it mean? We know, we implicitly assume that an effect has a cause. So we don't just say things happen arbitrarily. When things seem to happen arbitrarily, that disturbs us because normally things happen as per order. So this explanation of chance is actually very unsatisfactory. It's counterintuitive. That's not the way we normally look at life. And further, it is very disempowering. Because I may just be going through life, and by chance, anything can happen to anyone. And the whole of life becomes pointless. You know, we consider our life so meaningful and so valuable. And just, we might be going on a road and a bank by some passing vehicle. That will be the end of our life. So the idea that everything happens by chance is not at all satisfactory. The other alternative is that there is God in control and everything happens by God's will. This also is not a very satisfactory explanation. Because then this makes God discriminatory. You know, God made this person intelligent and God made this person down. God made this person wealthy, God made this person poor. Why does God discriminate like this? And on top of it, we are told that we have to worship such a God. And say, if somebody is discriminatory, how can we worship and how can we love such a person? Now some people may say that, now actually this is the broad understanding of the Abrahamic religions. The world's religions can be divided into two broad traditions, the Abrahamic religions and the Dharmic religions. The Abrahamic religions are Judaism, Christianity and Islam. The Dharmic religions are Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism, Hinduism. The fundamental difference between these two sets of religions is that the Abrahamic religions focus very much on historical events. This prophet, this Messiah, Messiah, this messenger, and he is the deliverer. Now the Dharmic religions, they also have great saints, but their focus is on Dharma. Dharma essentially means principles. Now, the focus is not on persons. Persons are important, but the focus is on principles. Understanding principles and harmonizing with those principles. So the Abrahamic religion say that everything happens by God's will. So why are there difficulties? Why are some people poor? So that is a test of God. Okay, we can say it's a test of God. But the problem is that it's not just a test. It's a discriminatory test. So imagine there's a class, and after the 6 months class gets over, at the end of the semester, the teacher gives the exam. And if all the students get different question papers, some student gets very easy question paper, and some student gets very difficult question paper. Now the students will not be asking the question, why there is an exam? Okay, why different exams for different people? Isn't it? So that doesn't make sense. Somebody says, hey, that God's will is different from your, God's justice is different from our justice. That's fine, but God's justice should be different in terms of being better, not worse. So to say that all the differences in this world are by God's will, that casts God as unjust. And when people see only these two alternatives, things either happen by chance or they happen by God's will, then many people feel that I cannot worship such a God. And they go towards atheism. So, and when if religious people say, you know, this is the God you have to believe in. If you are not going to believe in him, then you are going to go to hell. And people become profoundly alienated. I was just last month in America. So in America, some states are called the Bible Belt. So where there are a lot of evangelical Christians who preach quite aggressively. I know it. So, now, so there, in the Bible Belt, so there are some Christians who are very aggressive. And they, as a result of that, there are some atheists also become very aggressive. So I saw one bumper sticker. So they say, oh God, please save me from your preachers. So, normally God saves us through his preachers. But the preachers come up as very self-righteous, very condescending, very fanatical. Then people say, I don't want to have anything to do with this. So now these are the two alternatives. That's what people think. But there is a third alternative. So, to go back to cricket, before I come to the third alternative. Suppose we say there is a scoreboard. And there are two teams. And team A starts with a score of 0. And team B starts with a score of 200. Hey, what is going on? How can you have a score of 0 for this team and a score of 200 for this team? Now, we can have two explanations. One is that, you know, the scoreboard operates by chance. So this team is lucky, they got a score of 200. And that team is unlucky, they got a score of 0. What kind of match will we have if the scoreboard operates by chance? The scoreboard has to operate by performance. That doesn't make any sense. The other explanation could be, no, there is a match fixing. That whoever is managing the scoreboard they want a particular team to win. So they have arranged, they have fixed the scoreboard in such a way that this team gets a higher score. This also sounds very unfair. How can a team play like this? So basically there are two alternatives like that. You know, that everything happens by chance or everything happens by God's will. But there can be a third possibility. A third possibility is that this is the second innings of a match. And one team has got a lead of 200 from a previous match. From a previous innings. So the score, the starting score of the teams is not determined by chance or by the scorekeeper. It is determined by their own past performance. So similarly, where we start off in this life, the Bhagavad Gita explains that this life is not the only innings. There have been many innings before and there will be innings in future also. So where we start in this innings depends on how much we have scored in the previous innings. So some people have scored more and that's why they may start at a higher point. Some people may have scored less and that's why they start at a lower point. But the important thing here is that our match is not against each other. So in the match of life, we don't have to score more than someone else to win. We just have to reach our target score. If we reach our target score, we will win. So in that sense, so there is the atheistic worldview. There is the worldview which says that God determines everything. See, God is in control, but God has also given us free will. And where we are situated, that depends on where we are, what we have done in the past. So God does not discriminate. God reciprocates. He reciprocates. Based on what we have done, He rewards accordingly. And this vision actually transforms the universe into a university. That means I may be better situated than someone else. I may be wealthy, somebody may be poor. But I may be here right now, but I have very well gone through that phase. When my karma was bad, I may have gone through that phase. And tomorrow that person will also come to where I am if they do good karma. And when we understand that we all are on a journey of spiritual evolution, we're all growing towards perfection, then we understand that we all can cooperate. We all can cooperate and move onwards. So we don't, in this world, there are limited resources. And we may have to compete. But our ultimate destination is beyond this world. Our score in this world may make a big difference in this world. But in the long run, it won't make any difference. You know, we are all going toward the same destination. So at another level, when we get the spiritual understanding of life, then the differences in this world don't make that much of a difference. In the purport of 9.33, in the Bhagavad Gita, Anityam Asukham Lokam Imam Prapya Bhajasvamam, Krishna says, Anityam Asukham Lokam. This world is temporary and it is not, there's no happiness, real happiness in this world. Imam Prapya Bhajasvamam. Therefore, worship Him. Devote yourself to Him. In that purport, Prabhupada says, in this world, there are differences like rich and poor, like intelligent and foolish. But he says, ultimately, this world is not a happy place for anyone. Whether we are rich or whether we are poor, whether we are intelligent or less intelligent, this world is not a happy place for anyone. No. Misery is democratic. Everybody has a right to misery. And everybody gets misery in life. The form of misery may vary. Sometimes people say, in the past, you know, there was no air conditioning. So people would be in the heat and they would sweat. They're so miserable. Yes, in the past, because of heat, people would sweat. Now we have AC, and in our AC offices, we have stress. And we sweat because of stress. So, the form of misery may change, But the principle of misery remains unchanged. Everybody gets misery in this world. And ultimately, we can all go beyond misery by practicing bhakti. We can raise our consciousness towards Krishna. And the more we become absorbed in Krishna, the more we transcend misery. So the differences are there at the material level. They make a big difference at the material level. But ultimately, our happiness does not depend on the material level of reality. We can all become happy from wherever we are by connecting ourselves with Krishna, by absorbing ourselves in Krishna. So God is not discriminatory. The iniquities of this world are because we ourselves have gone through many innings in our life. And whatever we score, the score here refers to our own karma. Whatever karma we do, it is going to count, it is going to accumulate. If we do good, even if there seems to be no result, the result is there. The result is there. How is the result there? Say in cricket, sometimes, you know, batsmen may bat very well, but say the remaining team doesn't perform and the team loses. But then if this batsman is batting very well, every run the batsman is scoring, that is going to the batsman's account. And in the cumulative record, it will be there, the batsman scores so many runs. So like that, sometimes in our life, as I said, there is karma, there is daiva, there is kala, and then there is phala. Sometimes we may do our karma, but because the daiva is not there. So in the cricketer's, in the batsman's case, the batsman may bat very well. But if the other team members don't bat well, then they may not win the match. So the batsman's batting well is the karma, but the other team performing, that is also the daiva. So sometimes we may do our part very well, but still we may not get result. So at that time, we have to understand that our karma does not go in vain. Our karma accumulates. So there are different kinds of karma. There is, if we consider karma to be like a big water tank. So the total accumulation of karma that we have, that is the sanchit karma. Sanchit karma is accumulated karma. And then, just like in a water tank, say there is one tap from which water is coming out. There's another tap from which water is going in. So the water that is going in is what is called as the kriyaman karma. The karma that I am doing right now. So that is water going inside. And what I am experiencing right now, what I am going through right now, that is the Agami karma, or that has two sections, prarabdha and aprarabdha. I'm not going to go into analysis of karma. That's a whole different seminar in itself. But here the point which I'm making is that everything that we do, it is going in that karmic tank. So if we work hard, that is never lost. It is all accumulated. So sometimes when we work in life and we don't get results, then we become very discouraged. I worked so hard. I did not get any result. So, and when if we don't get result once, twice, thrice, we feel, you know, I am a failure. I am good for nothing. And meri kismat hi phooti hai. You may say like that. Actually, sometimes we all may go through a bad phase in our life. So it's like, I am putting in clean water over here. But in the past, there was some dirty water. So from this side, some dirty water is coming out. But the clean water that is there, it is accumulating. And that will also come out in due course. So when we think that our actions alone determine the results, on the positive side, we may say, you know, I worked so hard, so I achieved results. But the problem with that is, if we take credit for our success, then we have to take the blame for our failures. And then when we fail, that can be very crippling. Some people, you know, they become chronically depressed. They develop inferiority complex. They become suicidal. Why? Because they feel, no, nothing is working in my life. Well, what they are doing is working. But they are thinking of what is working in terms of the results. So just like a batsman may bat very well, but sometimes if the team doesn't perform, the batsman may not be able to win the match. But the batsman should know, I did my part. It's up to others to do their part. So like that in our life, we do our part, sometimes the results may not come. But when we are doing our part, that is contributing to our growth. That is contributing to our future. That is never lost. When people play a cricket match, at that time, a lot depends on the pitch. Some pitches are very favorable for batting. They are called batsman's paradise. And a batsman's paradise is a bowler's nightmare. So, some pitches are so good for batting that the bowler only thing they can hope for is that I don't get hit for sixes. That's all. And some pitches may be actually bowler's paradise. And it becomes a batsman's nightmare. So now, imagine, say, two cricket matches are going on. Say, one is in India, where often the pitches are supposed to be very friendly for batsmen. And there is another match going on in Australia, where the pitches are quite favorable for the bowlers. And there are two batsmen batting. And now, if these two batsmen start competing with each other, you know, a person who is batting on a batsman's pitch, he may score a double century. Somebody who is batting on a bowler's pitch, that person may with great difficulty score a half century. But actually, in terms of application, in terms of dedication, that half century may have required more effort than a double century. So those who are really good at cricket, they will see not just the score. They will see the setting in which the score was made. They'll appreciate this half century is also glorious. So if you just start flatly comparing people, comparing batsmen based on simply their scores, then we neglect other realities. So similarly, you know, if we compare ourselves with others, see, all of us are different. And all of us are playing on different pitches. So our own body and our own mind is the pitch on which we are playing. And my mind is different from your mind, is different from your mind. We all have different minds. And something which is very easy for me may be very difficult for you. And something which is so very easy for you may actually be very difficult for me. So if we recognize that we are all playing on different pitches, then we won't become so judgmental about others. What happens is, when we are good at something and somebody else is not good at that, we start looking down at them. But actually, they are playing on a different pitch. And on their pitch, this is not just about talents. It's also about simple things like habits. Some things, you know, we can see very easy. I'm a writer, so I'm a very verbal person. So whenever I come into a room, whenever even I go to a temple, whenever I go anywhere, I'm always looking at spellings. And if anywhere any spelling is wrong, I get irritated. You know, most people are not so verbal. So if I point out to somebody else, the spelling is wrong. Okay, who bothers? Why make us a big fuss about it? See, for me to see a wrong spelling, it just irritates me. It's like, you know, say somebody is doing kirtans. And somebody has got a very good musical sense. And then somebody is playing kartal who has no musical sense. And then, for somebody who has a musical sense, that wrong tal of the kartal, it's torture. It's torture. You know, you just can't focus. Come on. And the worst thing is, sometimes, some people enjoy music and don't understand music. That means, you know, they are blissfully playing the kartal and they are playing it wrong. But they don't understand it. And we may get angry. Why are you playing it like this? Come on, you know, I'm remembering Krishna. You also remember Krishna. So, no, I can't remember Krishna. You play it right first. So, you know, for us, it may be very obvious. This is wrong. You're playing it wrong. But some people are called tone deaf. No? Tone deaf. They just can't understand it. So when that happens, they are playing on a completely different pitch from what we are playing. And when we judge them by our standards, or we judge ourselves by their standards, Either way, we get ourselves into trouble. Now, if we judge them by our standards, we come off as very judgmental, very picky, very fault-finding. It can happen for even ordinary things in life. Now, some people, they're very cleanliness conscious. And there are some other people, you know, they're completely unconscious about cleanliness. Somebody else may come and say that, you know, why didn't you clean your room? Oh, is it unclean? I didn't notice anything. Now, they're not saying that to rile us. They just don't notice it. So when we understand that for them, actually, for us, you know, we can't tolerate uncleanness. Say, come on, just it takes 2 minutes, just clean things up. And, you know, for them to notice that will take 2 days. They'll just not notice it only. So what happens is, different people are playing on different pitches. What seems easy for us can be very difficult for them. And when we understand this, then we become more understanding. That is not, becoming more understanding doesn't mean that we accept everyone for what they are and just tolerate everything. But actually, change begins with acceptance. No, if a person is like this, if a person at this level, and I am blaming them, why are you not at this level? Well, I'm not. I'm here. See, to give you another example, say, I was coming here by car from Dubai. Say, suppose we took a wrong turn and went somewhere else. And then whoever guiding us, they said, no, why did you take a wrong turn? You're such a fool. Why did you understand it properly? Why did you take a wrong turn? Okay, well, I have taken a wrong turn now. Please tell me how I can come on the right track. You know, if you just keep blaming why are you there? Well, it doesn't help at all. If we have gone wrong, whoever is guiding us, they have to accept, okay, I have gone wrong. Okay, you are there. Now, I'll help you come here. So like that, you know, different people, when we understand they are playing on different pitches. So we accept them where they are and then we can help them to change. But if we don't accept them for what they are, then we are always blaming them. Why are you like this? Why are you not like that? And when we constantly criticize people, what happens is people's energy gets shifted from correcting themselves to justifying themselves. So when somebody feels constantly critiqued, constantly attacked, then they just want to defend themselves. And then whatever energy they could have used for correcting themselves, they don't use it for correcting themselves. Just use it for defending themselves. And thus, we end up perpetuating the very behavior in others that we want them to change. So, when we understand this point that, you know, they're playing on a different pitch. And therefore, I may want them to change and I can communicate to them. You know, this just troubles me too much. Can you just change this? They may also want to change, but we have to help them. We're not meant to judge them. Taking this point further, actually, we have to understand that, like, if there's a pitch, if there's a test match, the same pitch performs differently on the first day and very differently on the fifth day. Some pitches are very good for batting on the first day. But on the fifth day, those pitches are extremely difficult. And on the first day, somebody may score 300 runs. And on the last day, even if somebody scores 100, a team scores 100, 150, 200, that's also a big thing. But because the pitch has changed. So same way, actually, our own mind is the pitch on which we are playing. And our own mind changes. So now, when a batsman is batting, if they have their purpose is the same, they want to score runs. But depending on how the pitch is, they have to change their strategy. So on the first day, they'll bat differently. On the fifth day, they'll have to bat differently. Because the pitch is different. Similarly, our mind goes through different moods. And as the mind's moods change, what happens is that when the mind's moods change, the ease with which we were doing something earlier, that is no longer there. And that thing seems very difficult afterwards. So I was giving a youth meeting once in Melbourne, and then one boy asked, you know, what is wrong with love marriages? So, so I said, there's nothing wrong with love marriages. The problem is that what is wrong is to equate, what is wrong is actually the terminology. Terminology is, then we say love marriages versus arranged marriages. What it means is, in arranged marriages there is no love. Isn't it? But it's not necessarily like that. And it means in love marriage there is love always there. It is also not necessary. Because the mind has its emotions, it has its own feelings. So if we are driven, if we just turn that terminology around and say, instead of calling it love marriages versus arranged marriages, we call it infatuation marriages versus thoughtful marriages. So the terminology itself is loaded, isn't it? So, yes, when two people meet each other, they may feel attracted. In the movies, they say, you know, I felt electricity going through my body.
Whatever.
So now these things, these feelings may come. But, you know, what is important is for the longevity of a relationship, there may be love at first sight. But what is more important is what happens after many sights. So, the longevity of the relationship depends on, the mind will go through different moods. And if the relationship is based simply on the moods, sometimes two people say that, you know, I cannot live without you. And then 6 months later, they say, I can't live with you. So now in this case, what happened? The pitch changed. So the pitch has changed. The mind is the pitch on which you are playing. And the mind's moods keep changing. So initially, there might have been attraction. And that attraction was the basis of the relationship. But over a period of time, if the relationship is to be sustainable, we cannot base it only on attraction. The relationship has to be based on commitment.
So an announcement to be made, two cars are blocking the way. Yes.
Hare Krishna, there are two cars which are blocking the villas on the opposite side. Kindly remove that. 39411.
And 51450. Whoever escaped his car, kindly remove this. 39411 and 51450. Both are charger registration. Hare Krishna.
So, if the relationships are to have longevity, then they cannot be based just on attraction or infatuation. They have to be based on commitment. Commitment means that whether I feel like it or I don't feel like it, I persevere. So sometimes our feelings will help us. Sometimes our feeling will obstruct us. So just like in the cricket match, sometimes the pitch may help the batsman. Sometimes the pitch may trouble the batsman. But the batsman's purpose remains the same. The purpose is to try to bat and score runs. So like that, sometimes our mind's moods are such that sometimes our feelings help us in doing things. But sometimes our feelings obstruct us. Either way, we have to stay fixed in our purpose. If we let ourselves be entirely determined by our feelings, then the same thing that I am attracted to today, I'll be repelled tomorrow. And then we will not be able to be stable in anything. So our feelings, they do affect us. Now we can't wish away our feelings. Now if I'm feeling low, if I'm feeling sad, if I'm feeling depressed, if I'm feeling irritated, I can't wish away those feelings. Those feelings are there. But just because the feelings are there, that doesn't mean that I have to act on those feelings. That means that, okay, this feeling is there, now let me see how to deal with it. So, when we understand that our feelings are actually often just, our changed feelings are simply the changed pitch, the changed mind, then we don't take the feelings too seriously. When Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 5.20 that na praharishet priyam prapya no dvijet prapya priyam sthira buddhir asammudho brahma vid brahmani sthitaha. So he says na praharishet priyam prapya. When you get something you like, don't just jump up and down, don't be too elated. No dvijet prapya priyam. When you get something which is apriya, which is unfavorable, don't become dejected. How to avoid it? Sthira buddhir, keep your intelligence fixed. Asammudho, no, this is temporary. Don't get caught by it. Don't be deluded. Asammudho. And how will this happen? Brahmavit, brahmani sthitaha. Brahmavit, one who understands Brahma, one who understands spiritual reality. And not just understand spiritual reality, brahmani sthitaha, one who is situated in spiritual reality. That person will be able to stay fixed. So what does it mean? I'll conclude with this point about brahmani sthitaha. Our feelings will affect us. Naturally, if we get something good, we'll be happy. If something bad happens, we will be unhappy. But what Krishna is saying is, don't let these emotions carry you away. When we are brahmavit, when we have spiritual understanding, at that time we understand that actually whatever happens at the material level, that is small. What happens at the spiritual level is big. So, now a material gain is like a 50 dirham gain. A material loss is like a 50 dirham loss. But our spiritual growth, our relationship with Krishna, that is like a 50 million dirham gain. So, that is what really matters. Now, if I had only 50 dirham with me and somebody takes it away, I'll fight with my life to keep it. But, you know, if I'm a millionaire and then some 50 dirham falls out of my pocket, and some beggar comes and takes it. Take it. Tumhi kya yaad rakhega? He said, take it. It's not a big deal for us. So like that, when we practice bhakti, when we connect with Krishna, we understand, we experience that actually by practicing bhakti, I can experience a peace and joy that is far greater than whatever I may experience in other. And this, as we keep practicing bhakti, we experience this more and more and more. And by this experience, we can get the conviction. Okay, material ups and downs, I don't have to get too shaken by them. Because as compared to this, this is so much bigger. My relationship with Krishna, my bhakti for Krishna is so much bigger. And as this distress has come, this pleasure has come, okay, it's all temporary. Sometimes, when scripture tells us, you know, actually material pleasure is temporary, don't chase after it. Now this may make, we are still attracted to material pleasure. And we say, okay, it's temporary, but it's wonderful. I want it right now. So what happens is, we are attracted to material pleasure. Its temporariness, it doesn't register within us. But over a period of time, as we keep practicing bhakti, we start realizing, yes, I get so excited about this pleasure, but afterwards, no, okay, it gets over. Nothing to be so excited about. We start realizing that. And the positive side of this is that not only are the pleasures temporary, the problems also are temporary. The troubles that we face right now, they may seem to be very big. But they are also temporary. Temporary means that they are not going to last forever. So, we don't overreact to problems. Tams tiksha subhartha, tolerate. Be patient. Be calm. This has come, this will go. So, like sometimes, there are some leeches. Leeches are insects which suck blood. Now, sometimes if a leech comes and bites, we may see that actually this leech, we can actually sense it without taking blood out of our body. It's very scary to think something is taking blood out. And at that time, I may just try to pull it out. But some leeches, they catch hold of the skin so tightly that if you try to pull the leech out, they'll pull the whole skin out. You know, a big wound will come up on the body. But if you just wait, the leeches, they don't suck infinite amount of blood. They're tiny creatures. No, they have some small tubules. And once that tubule becomes filled with that much blood, they themselves let go. You just flip it, they'll fall off. So like that, sometimes by our past karma, some problems come in our life. And if those problems come, those problems are like leeches that suck blood. At that time, if you overreact, you know, if somebody behaves unreasonably, and then we just blast out at them, speaking anything and everything that comes in our mind, and then, hey, you think like this about horrible. And a small misunderstanding blows into a big world war. What happens at that time? Just, okay, this person behaved unreasonably, okay, just tolerate it. We'll go away. Different. We all go through different moods. Sometimes they may be just in a bad mood. Just tolerate it. So the problems are also temporary. When we understand it, we can tolerate it. So, once one devotee asked me a question, this is continuation, conclusion of the same topic, that he said that, you know, there is one devotee who doesn't like me. And he has told me also he doesn't like me. So, what can I do when I am dealing with this devotee? So, if I have to deal with this devotee, or I have to serve with this devotee, what can I do? So, explain that actually the difference between a devotee relationship and a non-devotee relationship is that a devotee is not just relating with the other person. The devotee is also relating with Krishna. If that person is behaving badly with me and I behave badly with him, then what is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee? So, a devotee behaves considering, okay, this person is behaving this way, what will please Krishna? How can I please Krishna in this situation? Sometimes we may have to take strong action also. Somebody is again and again making the same mistake. We may have to take some strong action. But our response is not just a reaction to their action. Our response is a well-chosen course of action based on higher wisdom. So for example, say there are these cloth shops where, you know, there are hundreds of dresses which are available. And there are these attendants who show the clothes to the customers. Now some people, they may come and see 100 clothes and not purchase even one cloth. And then after that, the attendant who is there, attendant has to actually fold all the clothes, put them on the hanger, put them. They say, you know, I showed 100 clothes and this person did not take even one cloth. I say, what a waste of time. And then next time that customer comes, you know, the attendant may be rude with them, attendant may be brusque with them. But if the attendant thinks that actually my salary is not coming from this customer, my salary is coming from my boss, and my boss is watching me, and my boss also knows that this customer is a difficult customer. My boss also knows that making a sale to this customer is difficult. So my boss will be seeing how patient I am, how courteous I am. And, you know, if the boss actually sees this patient, this attendant, even while dealing with such a difficult customer, is so patient, so courteous, so cool, the boss may promote such an attendant, even though that attendant has made no sale. Why? Because that attendant has the temperament. So, similarly, in our relationship, we are not just dealing with the other person. We are dealing with Krishna also. So we should know that Krishna is watching us. And we focus on, okay, in this relationship, this person is behaving unreasonably. But what will please Krishna? How can I act in a way that Krishna will be pleased with me? If we have that attitude, then we won't overreact to small, small things. So what this means is that sometimes we may be playing, as I said, that the pitch on which we play itself changes at different times. And the pitch on which others play also changes. If we understand this, then we become understanding. And even if that person is behaving unreasonably, now how we deal with that person, that is a different issue. In different situations, different actions may be required. Krishna tells Arjuna, tolerate. But when the Kauravas commit so many atrocities, Krishna doesn't tell Arjuna, tolerate. Krishna tells Arjuna, fight the war. So there are certain situations where tolerance is recommended. So in certain situations, aggressive action may be required. But it is none of this is impulsive. All of it is well chosen. And that capacity to choose comes when we see our interaction with others not just as an interaction with that person. We see our interaction with others also as an interaction with Krishna. So we please Krishna not just by how we directly serve Krishna, how we chant his holy names, how we associate with, how we worship the deities, how we come in satsang, all this is important. But we serve Krishna also by how we deal with others. The primary difference between a Kanishta Adhikari, a Madhyam Adhikari, and Uttam Adhikari. Kanishta Adhikari is a neophyte devotee. Madhyam Adhikari is a medium level devotee. And Uttam Adhikari is a top level devotee. The primary difference between them is in where all they can see Krishna. The Kanishta Adhikari can see Krishna only in the temple. And when they are in the temple, very sweet, very gentle, very humble, very kind. And as soon as they come out of the temple, they're shouting and snapping and cursing. Bhagwan ke samne achha rehna chahiye. But Bhagwan to sab jagah pe. Krishna is there everywhere. So the more we advance, we understand that my spiritual caliber is seen not just in how I am doing my devotional activities. It's also seen in how I am acting with others. So if our bhakti makes us more tolerant, more understanding, then our relationship with Krishna will actually help us to improve our relationship with others also. Because we will act in a mature way in that relationship. And thus, we can move more smoothly towards Krishna by making our relationships in this world smoother. So in this way, bhakti actually helps us not just in the sense of taking us beyond this world to Krishna's eternal abode. Bhakti also helps us to live better in this world. To live better means in two ways. When problems come, we can cope with them better. And also, we can do our part better. As our bhakti becomes susukham kartamavyam, it becomes joyfully performed. So I'll summarize. I spoke about what cricket can teach us about life. So I talked about mainly five things. First is about how performance matters, but performance is not all that matters. Talked about how cricketers also have their superstitions. Why? Because they know there is something beyond my performance that determines the result. And what that is, the Bhagavad Gita philosophy explains to us. Our performance is karma. So karma plus daiva plus kala. That determines phala. So when the Bhagavad Gita tells karmanyeva adhikaraste, what it is saying is not that you don't care for the fruits. Not that we be irresponsible about the fruits, but that we focus on what is in our hands. And that way, we can be productive. We can do our best without worrying about that which is not in our control. Then we discuss that, okay, that which is not in my control, the daiva, what determines that? And I said that is also determined by our own past karma. So in that connection, we discussed how there is the problem of evil, how there is inequality in life, and what is the cause of this inequality. So there are three options. One is, it's all by chance. So it's like one team has got a score of 200, another team has a starting score of 0. So why the difference? The scoreboard just works by chance. You know, we hardly ever work by that idea. We always see that causes have effects, and effects should have causes. That's how we function in life. So the other alternative is that it's by God's will. So now this actually makes it even more difficult. If God is discriminatory, then how can I devote myself to such a God? And we can say it is God's test, but why does God test different people differently? So that's like the scorekeeper is partial and the scorekeeper is giving more score to some team. It's difficult to play such a match. But if you understand this in the second innings, and in the previous innings, somebody, the team has scored more. And that's why they have got a more score. So like that, the differences that we are there in this life, they are coming from what we have done in our past life. So then we understand that God does not discriminate, He reciprocates. And our match is not against us, others. Our match is basically we have to reach a target. We have to become pure. We have to develop love for God. And on that journey of evolution, we may be ahead of others. But we have gone through the struggles which they have gone through. And we can help them rise up. And their rising up is not going to threaten us. We're all going toward the same destination. That way we can have a cooperative spirit. Life becomes like a university where we all learn and we move forwards. Then I discussed about how when we're playing cricket, that the third lesson. So second lesson basically is that the differences that we face in life, they are basically because of our own past deeds. So we shouldn't blame God or blame anyone else for that. The third is that, you know, we are all playing on different pitches. So don't compare. So a batsman, a person scoring a double century on a batsman's pitch is not necessarily better than a person who scores a half century on a bowler's pitch. So that which is easy in one setting may be very difficult in another setting. So our own body and mind is the pitch on which we are all playing. And so for some people, music may just come easy. And for some people, music is like Latin, Greek or Sanskrit. You don't understand anything about it. So then, when we understand that different people are playing on different pitches, we become more understanding towards them. After we accept people for where they are, then we can help them change. Somebody's gone on a wrong destination, just cursing them, why did you go there? It doesn't help them. So we help them by accepting where they are, then helping them to rise upwards. And then the fourth point we discussed is that the pitch on which we play also changes. So that means that we may have, our mind may feel in a particular way today and may feel in a very different way tomorrow. So we cannot let our actions be determined only by our feelings. Somebody may say, I cannot live without you now. And afterward, they may say, I cannot live with you. But we cannot base our relationship simply based on our feelings. So, it's usually based on our commitment. Commitment means, whether it's easy or difficult to bat, the batsman still tries to bat and score runs. Like sometimes our feelings may assist us, sometimes our feelings may obstruct us. But still, we try to keep persevering in what we are doing. And that way, we can ultimately move towards success. And lastly, I discussed about the same point. Our own pitch is changing, but others' pitches are also changing. So, when some people behave in an unreasonable way, at that time, we understand that our relationship with is not only with them. No. So, our relationship is with Krishna. So, the way we act in our life, even if it doesn't produce any result immediately, it is contributing to a result ultimately. A batsman may bat very well, but they may fail because the team is not performing. But still the batsman's score, that is adding to his batting record. So like that, when we act properly, when we act rightly, that is contributing to our karmic record. And ultimately, if we are acting rightly, it is pleasing Krishna. So with this world, sometimes we will get good, sometimes we will get bad. But that good and bad is like a small monetary gain or a small monetary loss. But our relationship with Krishna is like a huge gain. So we don't get so caught in the small gains and losses that we neglect this big gain. And the same principle in our relationships. Somebody may be behaving unreasonably, but if somebody may behave badly, that doesn't mean we behave badly with them. We see that Krishna is the third person in the relationship. It's like there's a difficult customer, but the attendant sees my boss is also there. My primary purpose is not just to make the sale. My primary purpose is to please my boss. I would like to make the sale, of course, but I want to please my boss. And the boss may promote a patient salesman, even if they're not able to make a sale, they behave well. So like that, sometimes we, while interacting with some people, may fail. We may not be able to make them see sense. We may not be able to get them to do the right thing. But if we are patient, we are understanding, Krishna will be pleased and we will grow in our relationship with Krishna. And when we work to try to please Krishna, then that relationship with Krishna helps us become more mature in our relationship in this world also. And in that way, bhakti helps us not only to attain the ultimate destination beyond this world, but it also helps us function better in this world, to do better and to deal with what life gives us also better. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Do we have time for question answers?
Yeah, you can.
Yes, please. Yes, any questions? Yes, please.
He is asking the question that to grow in bhakti, what type of speech we need?
Okay. So to grow in bhakti, what type of pitch do we need? Well, pitches are not matter of choices. We have to play on the pitch that we have. So we have got a particular body, we have got a particular mind, and there is no spare mind available. The mind is not like a replaceable part. So our mind is the only mind we have. So we have to learn to train it. So it's rather than saying what kind of pitch is favorable for bhakti, we can try to think how we can make our present pitch favorable. Okay, I have a particular kind of mind. How can I engage this in bhakti? That means we will have certain likings, we have certain dislikes. So what we can do is say this is a circle of bhakti. And this is a circle of our likes and of our likes. So we can try to find some intersection between the two. What I like to do and what is also a devotional activity. And then we do all our devotional activities as a part of a sadhana, but we focus on this. So for example, the whole principle of Varnashram Dharma was this. It is not just a division of society into castes. The point of Varnashram is to engage people according to their talents. So Brahmanas like to do intellectual work. So the Varnashram arranges that you like to do intellectual work, but you do intellectual work in a spirit of service to God. Somebody likes to do managerial work, Kshatriyas do managerial work, but they do it in a mood of service to God. So today Varnashram is quite difficult to re-establish. But and that may be done, being that is being attempted at a social level in our society movement. But at an individual level, we can take the essential principle that okay, what is it within the realm of bhakti that I like to do? And let me make a commitment to doing that. At least that. And through that, what will happen? We'll connect with Krishna. We'll get a taste in Krishna bhakti. And then that taste will move on to other things. So for example, if I like kirtans, and I just focus on kirtans. I do other things, but whenever my mind gets agitated, I take shelter in kirtans. I expose myself to as much kirtans as possible. And that way, we have some ready, easy connection with Krishna. And by that, we'll develop a taste for Krishna Bhakti. And gradually, that taste of Krishna Bhakti is what makes our mind, our mental pitch, favorable for practicing Bhakti. Does it answer your question? Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, no. Okay, we'll come. Yeah.
What is the level of tolerance for a bad customer?
Sorry?
What is the level of tolerance for a bad customer? He said.
Okay. Okay. The question is, I'll repeat it. So what is the level of tolerance for a bad customer? Yeah. So again, the level of tolerance cannot be determined during our own phase of intolerance. What that means is, when I'm angry, even a small misbehavior seems intolerable. When I'm in a good mood, even a big problem also can manage it. So what we need to do is, even if somebody is behaving unreasonably, don't act impulsively. Don't act impulsively. So, best is to press a pause button. Basically, in any situation that we are in, there are three options for us. One is, we change the situation or change the person. Second is, we change ourselves. We change the situation, we change the person, or we just walk away from the situation. Walk away means you feel, okay, this is not changeable, I can't change. So I just walk. Walking away is not running away. Walking away is also a mature, thoughtful choice. So, it's like say somebody is working in a job and they find the job very difficult. Now, we find out, why is the job so difficult? Because my boss is very demanding or because my colleagues are very troublesome. So, maybe we can try to go in a different team. Or we can try to communicate better with them and try to understand what their concerns are. Or maybe, you know, we just don't have some skills, we learn those skills. So basically we have these three options. And at different times, different options can be chosen. In the Mahabharata, if we see, initially when the Pandavas came, at that time, the Kauravas did many terrible things. The Kauravas tried to poison Bhima. At that time, after Bhima came back, Yudhishthira told, don't tell anyone about this. Don't make an issue about this. Then eventually, even when they were sent to Varanavart and they attempted to be burnt alive, after the Pandavas came back, after they got the hand of Draupadi, then again the Pandavas did not come back and accuse, hey, you burned us, you tried to burn us alive. Dhritarashtra gave them a kingdom, actually it was an unfair settlement. He gave him a Khandav, which was like a barren land, but still they accepted it. So here they are all tolerating. But eventually, when they dishonored Draupadi, at that time, a particular line was crossed. And then, after that, the war had to take place. Still, even then also, Krishna went a Shantidut. But then, by that time, it was, Duryodhana was completely adamant. So, then it was, this is not the time for tolerance. This is the time for assertive action. But, it was not based on impulse. It's based on, they discussed, they thought, discussed with Drupada, Drupada's Brahmin, Krishna himself discussed, Krishna came a Shantidut. So generally, there may be certain situations which may just not be tolerable. And we have to understand that tolerance doesn't mean that we let others trample us. Tolerance simply means that we don't let small things come in the way of big things. Tolerance means that for me, my Krishna Bhakti is important. And while practicing Krishna Bhakti, you know, some this goes wrong, that goes wrong, that goes wrong. If I start getting worked up about everything that is going wrong, then I cannot practice Krishna Bhakti. So, similarly like this, there are some things which are really important for us. So like say, if I am going to office for a big meeting, important meeting, and I have to give a presentation. While going along, somebody just cuts me across. I get irritated. I start shouting at that person. And then I get into a bad mood because of that. By the time I reach my office, I'm in a bad mood and I can't give a good presentation. But somebody cutting me, I go, smooth, just tolerate it. So tolerance doesn't mean passive acceptance of anything and everything that somebody is doing. Tolerance simply means that we don't let small things come in the way of big things. So if something is actually coming in the way of big thing itself, on its own, then it's no longer a small thing. Then it may require an appropriate response. So, I would say three main things. First is, no matter if somebody's behavior seems intolerable, don't react impulsively. Just press a pause button and wait. And then, afterwards, we rationally evaluate, what are my options? Should I try to persuade and try to change the person? Should I try to change myself more? Should I just walk away from the situation? We can evaluate what to do. And when we talk about tolerance, tolerance is not a virtue in isolation. Tolerance is a virtue that is in service to devotion. Tolerance means that I tolerate smaller things so that they don't come in the way of big things. But if something is already coming in the way of a big thing, then that means, you know, it is a big thing and I may have to do something to change it. So based on understanding the broad, bigger picture of our life, the bigger purpose of our life, then we can decide whether this thing this thing needs to be changed or this thing can be tolerated. Or I just get out of the situation. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
If you want to send any question in chits by writing, that's also fine. There's one question behind. Yeah. Okay. So, if sometimes while chanting we don't feel at all blissful, what should we do at that time? How can we always feel blissful during our chanting? Actually, chanting itself is always blissful. But our mind comes in the way. It's like, say, somebody is drinking delicious mango juice. But while they're drinking mango juice, somebody else comes and pushes the mouth away.
No.
And all the mango juice just spills away. You can't drink it. And then not only they push the mouth away, see, you know, they're drinking that. Why don't you get that? Well, I'm drinking something nice. No, you go and get that. You leave that and go there. Then what happens? By the time you go there, that is also over. You come back, the mango juice also spilled away. So, like that, actually, when we say we don't find chanting blissful, what is happening? If we are able to connect with Krishna, if we are able to concentrate on Krishna, then chanting is peaceful, it is joyful. But our mind just distracts us away. Hey, why don't you do that? That has to be done. Why don't you get that? And then when we get distracted, we start thinking about that. We start worrying about that. We start craving for that. And then we are not able to connect with Krishna. Sukhena brahma samsparsham atyantam sukhamashnate. That when this Brahma samsparsha, when there is contact with Krishna, then there is joy. Atyantam sukham. There is ultimate happiness. So, but when the contact with Krishna does not happen, when we are chanting the holy names are not just to be chanted with the lips. They're actually to be heard with the mind. To be relished with the mind. Pibha mana sri Krishna divya ushadham. Kulashekhar Maharaj says, the holy name is like a medicine. But it is a medicine not just to be taken with the mouth or the ear, it's to be taken by the mind. So if the mind doesn't focus, then we can't relish it. So at our stage, we have to understand that because the mind is restless, because the mind is wild, so it will interrupt in our connection with Krishna. And that is why we don't feel blissful. So what do we do? So the chanting, it works at both levels. At one level, it is nectar. Not just chanting, the whole process of bhakti. Sometimes it is nectar. We just feel so joyful when we are chanting. But sometimes it doesn't feel like nectar at all. Sometimes it may feel like poison. I don't want to do this. So at that time, we have to use our buddhi. We have to use our intelligence. And understand that this chanting, even if it doesn't feel like amrita, at the very least, it is an aushadhi. It is a medicine. So the mind, which is just getting restless, going here and there, because it is distracted, so I'm not able to taste the sweetness of Krishna. But still, if I keep taking the medicine, chanting the holy names as a medicine, this very chanting will cure the mind. It will purify the mind. And as the mind becomes purified, it will become less restless. And as it becomes more calm, more receptive, then we'll be able to relish more and more. Yattad agre vishamiva pariname amritopamam. That which tastes like poison in the beginning will taste like nectar in the end. So, we may have to tolerate the poison to get to the nectar. And that's why, if we find that our mind is getting too agitated, we are just not able to taste the sweetness of bhakti, at that time, we have to use our buddhi. Jiva Goswami says, the Sandarbha is that for the Siddha Bhaktas, for those who are perfected devotees, it is their preeti that keeps them in bhakti. They love Krishna, that's why they are always practicing bhakti. But for us sadhakas, we don't have so much preeti. So he says, what will keep us in bhakti is not preeti, but buddhi. Buddhi is intelligence. So we have to use our intelligence. Yes, I'm not, chanting is not blissful right now, but it is working. Still, it is a medicine, it is purifying me. And if with this buddhi, we keep chanting, then gradually, as the mind gets cured, the taste will come. As we penetrate through the poison, the nectar will come. So that's why, along with chanting, it's also very important to study the philosophy regularly, to hear classes regularly. Because through studying Shastra and hearing Shastra, our buddhi gets pushti. Our buddhi gets nourishment. Our buddhi gets strong. And that's why we'll see if we are coming from good association, we are hearing classes, and then when we try to practice bhakti, we are also enthusiastic in practicing bhakti. And then our japa will also be better. So the way to make our bhakti, make our chanting regularly blissful, is to stay purposeful even when we don't feel blissful. Stay purposeful. Purposeful is, this is chanting, it's not blissful right now, but my purpose is purification. And this my chanting is like a medicine that will purify me. Kayena manasa buddhya kevalair indriyairapi yoginah karma kurvanti sangam tyaktva atma shuddhaye. In 5.11, Krishna says that the yogi practices yoga for the purpose of atma shuddhaye, for the purpose of purification. So even when we get no satisfaction, when we get no joy in bhakti, we can still practice it for purification. And then gradually, the satisfaction, the joy, the ecstasy will surely come. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Last question.
Depending upon what factor, we will get the pitch.
Okay. So last question. No? So depending on what factors do we get a pitch? Yes, it's a good question. Our pitch is determined by many things. We could classify them into 5 broad categories. First is our past karma. By our past karma, our mind, our body is shaped in a particular way. Sometimes even there are twins. They may be genetically similar. Sometimes there are what is called monozygotic twins. That means they have the same sperm and the same egg have united. So they're genetically not just similar, they are identical. But still, they're different persons. So what is making that difference? Their genes are completely the same, but still they are different. That is the Purva Janma Karma. So our body, our mind, our personality, this one shaping factor is our past karma. The second is our upbringing. The way we have been brought up. Say if we have been brought up with parents who were very irritable, very quarrelsome, then we may also be very irritable and quarrelsome. May, if our parents set an example of, even if they had some quarrels, they were always, they settled it amicably. They kept things in a decent level. Then we will also not want to overreact in the situation. So our upbringing also shapes us. The third is our association. The kind of people we associate with shapes how we become. The fourth is our free will. That means how we use what we have. And the fifth is God's grace, Krishna's mercy. What this means is, I just repeat this in terms of the pitch metaphor and in terms of our behavior. See, the first two are largely unchangeable for most of us. For those who are children, they are different. But for most of us, our past karma we can't change, our upbringing also we can't change. But what we can change is association. So if we tend to be very picky, that means if our mind always looks at faults, this is wrong, that is wrong, that is wrong. So if we associate with, even in devotee circle, if we associate with devotees who are always finding faults, then actually that tendency of the mind to find faults may get aggravated there also. So what we should do is an association, if we know that I have some behavior which is undesirable and there is some behavior which I want, then we try to associate with those who have those desirable traits. And we minimize the association of those who have those undesirable traits. And just by that example, that will rub off on us. So we can change our association. And the pitch that we get, it also changes by our free will. That means what? That, see, the mind is not a rigid, unchanging thing. The mind also keeps changing. So for example, there are these three modes, sattva-guna, rajoguna, tamoguna. So now sometimes, you know, we may just find ourselves feeling a little lazy. Say we are studying and we start feeling like yawning, feel lazy. At that time, if I just get up, walk, maybe go to a library and see everybody studying over there. And I also feel like studying. But, so then what I am doing? I am putting myself in a sattva-guni environment. So the tamoguna is there, but if I put myself in a sattva-guni environment, so I am using my free will to increase the influence of sattva within me. But if I am feeling a little tired, see, most of the time when we start yawning, the first yawn is not because of tiredness. It is because of boredom. What happens is, when we feel a little bored, because what happens, the mind doesn't like to do hard work. So if something requires hard work, you just start getting a little bored. And the mind very quickly misinterprets that yawn. Oh, you must be tired. You need some sleep now. And then, we can do more, but we just take a shortcut. So I think, I think I'm a little tired. So I want to study, but I'll lie down on this bed, and while sleeping, I'll read. And then while sleeping, we are reading one moment, and next moment we are in samadhi. But this is not the samadhi of Shuddha Sattva. This is the samadhi of Tamoguna. No, we are completely in ignorance. So what has happened here? There's a little influence of Tamoguna, but we use our free will to go more into a more tamasic environment. So then, basically, the shape of the pitch. There was a little Tamoguna, but we made it more Tamoguna. There's a little Tamoguna, but if you go to a library, then we can increase the sattvic influence also over there. So we, by our use of free will, can also change the way our pitch is shaped. And lastly is Krishna's grace. We may have a particular pitch, but Krishna can change the pitch completely. Krishna can miraculously change the way our mind functions. And we may have seen this in our own life. Say, we may have been very attracted to some things in the past. But by starting the practice of bhakti, something just go off. Some of us may have been very attached to eating meat. And we start practicing bhakti. And then say, if you're traveling in a plane and then somebody else starts eating meat, we don't even feel tempted. We just wanted to get over it. So what happened? The same mind which had a strong desire for that earlier, now it is not that there's a temptation and I'm resisting it. There's no temptation only. So the complete pitch has changed. So the process of bhakti can also change the pitch. So what pitch we have, that is to some extent determined by past karma, some extent determined by upbringing, some extent by association, some extent by our present use of the free will, and some extent by Krishna's grace. So what we can focus on is, the unchanging is accepted for what it is, but focus on what we can change. So we try to cultivate good association, try to use our free will as well as possible, and try to practice bhakti diligently to attract Krishna's mercy. And by that, our pitch, no matter however it was, it will become more and more favorable for us. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki Jai Gaur Premanand
Hari Bol
Hare
Krishna. Thank you very much.